Welcome back. Richard, it's good to see you this morning.
Good morning. I'm not going to say anything about day dates or anything that's occurring naturally in the world. So I learned my lesson last time, right?
That's right.
a few days out of sync. So, but I'll just say good morning. Good to see you again.
Good to see you. And today we're going to talk about, and I do think it's a little bit, I do recognize the irony a little bit in the fact that we're going to talk about social media a bit today. And I recognize that, you know, we put these videos up on YouTube, which is in many ways a form of social media. And, you know, but I am happy to say that we, you know, within the past week or two, we have gone over 10,000 subscribers. And so, you know, I think we should tell everybody that we appreciate them for subscribing to the YouTube channel. That's much appreciated. And thanks for getting the word out.
Right. Yeah. We're not a social media giant. You know, we're just we use it, but we're not part of the business end of that. But in the news this week, if you've been listening or watching, you probably have heard that 42 states and the District of Columbia are filing a lawsuit against Meta. And you all know Meta is, we used to call it Facebook. Well, Facebook is part of Meta, but Meta's the umbrella company, Mark Zuckerberg's umbrella company. It includes Instagram, Snapchat, WhatsApp, Messenger. 42 states are suing Meta for what they say is addictive features that are harming kids. And in addition to learning something about the lawsuit itself, we thought, well, let's take a closer look at what is meant by addictive features that are harming children. And there, we put a couple of articles in there if you're interested in looking up what is the lawsuit about. We have an article in there. But the real issue is that Facebook, Meta, now it's called Meta, embeds features into its apps that cause children to use them compulsively, right? And that's the crux of the lawsuit.
Right.
What this raises is, from a legal standpoint and from a psychological standpoint, is, are young people addicted to social media? That's going to be the question. The first question: are they addicted?
Right.
But we need to be careful about using the term addiction. And one of the interesting things of this lawsuit is going to be a discussion about addiction. What is addiction? And is social media addictive? And the reason we want to talk about this is because most parents will say, my child is addicted to her cell phone. My children are addicted to their iPads. They're addicted to this. They're addicted to that. And that's shorthand. That's common shorthand for they spend a lot of time on it. But it's going to be interesting from a legal perspective as to what do we mean by addiction.
Absolutely. I think it's really important that we talk about that. And I will throw out there real quick, because when you were going through the list of media or platforms that are owned by Meta, you mentioned Snapchat. But Meta owns Snapchat. It's Facebook.
Did I say Snapchat?
Yeah, you threw it out there, but the others, you were absolutely right. Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Messenger. But
Snapchat is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it introduces some of the same concerns. And so does, I mean, let's not forget that just a couple of months ago, there was all of that discussion about TikTok and the issues with that. And it's sort of the same concern, and that is that the algorithms that are used target people based upon different demographics, different, you know, search histories and some of these kinds of things. And as you said, the concern is that when it's using these powerful algorithms, it guides people into different directions. And we're talking about kids, and, you know, most of these platforms require you to be, or are supposed to require you to be, at least 13 years old.
Right.
There are people far, many subscribers are under the age of 13, but these algorithms guide them into different directions that contribute to, you know, things that we've talked before, like confirmatory bias and things like that, where you're only getting information about certain things, and then you start to get flooded by it. You start to get tons of these hits on different topics that you're looking into, and it can become a problem. And it does, as you said, contribute to at least compulsive,
right.
You know, we're going to deal with the issue of addiction.
Yeah. So what is it about the internet? You know, this, we talk about the allure of the internet. What is it about these platforms that make them so appealing? Well, even as adults, we fall prey to the allure of what I call the allure of the internet. You open up a page and you see something interesting. And so you click on that to see what it's about. And then that takes you to this and it takes you to another. And these are called rabbit holes. You know, people use that term rabbit hole. Rabbit hole, of course, reference Alice in Wonderland.
Mm-hmm.
Alice went down the rabbit hole and discovered this world. Some call it a psych. You know, was he on psychedelics when he wrote Alice in Wonderland and
right.
this world that he created, this Wonderland that he created? And it's things like there are a couple of ways you do that. One is paralysis analysis, and
right.
they mention this idea that I want to buy a pair of jeans. And so you go to this, you know, what about jeans? And all of a sudden you're going from picture to picture to company and this and that. And you spend 3.5 hours looking at 200 pairs of jeans when all you want is a pair of jeans.
Right.
But you find yourself going through these hours and hours of looking at different jeans and different clothing. And the other is there's a couple of other ways that called a hop, skip, and a jump, and you just go from one article to the other because it piques your interest. So we've all fallen prey to that. You know,
right.
you click on one thing and it takes you to a lot of other things that you might be interested in. And you remember Amazon from the very beginning said, people who like this also like this.
Right. Okay.
And it takes you to those other things. Then you look those up and you keep going down the rabbit hole.
Absolutely.
All internet sites have that appeal.
Mm-hmm.
What the lawsuit is saying is that there is a special allure with social media, and that's what this is about.
Absolutely. And these they have this special allure because it makes it, in the very least, appear more personal.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, there are other people that you know that are there, you know, when you're looking for those jeans, mm-hmm. you don't have your friend posting about it. You don't have your friends commenting about it or anything like that. But when you go to social media, you'll see these, you have these different pages or these different posts, mm-hmm. and you want to see it because you know that other people are going to be seeing it or other people are going to be talking about it. And so
right.
you have this sort of fear of missing out. You have this idea that, you know, there is something going on out there that you don't know about. And, you know, and again, let's just acknowledge that we all, I won't say we all, most of us use social media to some extent. Mm-hmm. You know, there was, for example, there was a shooting in Maine right. a few days right. ago. I found out via TikTok because the algorithm that I look up, you know, I end up getting some news and things like that through there. But that's how I found out. And so had I not been scrolling through TikTok, I probably wouldn't have heard about it when I did. And so we are compelled to look because, you know, we might otherwise miss something that's going on.
Right.
But we also feel compelled because, you know, that's how we feel as though we're connecting with other people.
Right.
You know, if somebody messages us or if somebody posts something, we feel like we have to respond mm-hmm. because we certainly want them to respond if we message them or if we post something and we want them to respond. So there's this interesting connection that gives the at least facade of personalization of it being very, you know, this is about me with social media, even though research kind of supports the idea that it's not. But that's what many of us think. And that's why we are so attracted to it.
That's right. And we all feel that allure. We all feel that appeal. I had a discussion with my sister. I mean, we're way beyond the millennial, you know, baby boomers. And she was talking about this, that you feel compelled to respond. You know, we all feel that compulsion to respond, even as adults. So we have fear of missing out. You know, you got to stay connected so that you don't miss out on anything. But we also feel compelled to respond. Because if you don't, people say, oh, you didn't answer my text. Are you ghosting me? Are you leaving me out? Why didn't you respond? And we have this fear that if we don't respond, people are going to stop communicating with us. You know, I didn't invite you because you can never come anyway. So, you know, you never did. So I didn't invite you. And right. That's, so you, there is this compulsive need to stay connected, which right. means you have to let messages in and you feel compelled to respond to them. Now, with this kind of information, what the developers did years ago is they knew that there's a certain type of reinforcement yeah. that is very, very compelling. And we call that intermittent reinforcement. And that is that you don't always get reinforced. You don't always get rewarded, but there's always the chance that you'll get rewarded. And we've known for 100 years that's a very powerful reinforcer. The typical example is the slot machine. Okay, that's what everybody talks about is a slot machine. Many other examples, but that's the easiest one. And most people know how a slot machine works. Very compelling. You keep putting money into it. And that's the principle behind these apps, is that you're going to get this reinforcement. You know, we're going to keep flooding you with things and you're going to keep clicking to get the reinforcement that you're looking for. All right.
Right. And, you know, and I'll throw in there that this intermittent reinforcement, it's even more powerful than constant reinforcement.
That's right.
You know, Even if you are reinforced every single time you do it, at some point you reach what's called satiation. You just, it's like, okay, I mean, I know they're going to respond, so I'll just wait, or, you know, I really don't feel like anything. You get to a point where it's, you just kind of pull back and you stop interacting with it, or you stop trying to.
Yeah, you either say, I've had enough, or yeah. you're tired, or so your brain doesn't react.
Yeah.
Because you're getting it all the time and it gets accustomed to it.
Absolutely.
But what this does is it doesn't give it every time. And so you keep chasing it.
Right. Yeah. So you never quite get to that satiation. You're always going after it. You're always hoping that this will be the time. This will be the time. Never mind the fact that you could go, you know, 100 of attempts in between with no response.
Right.
Just that likelihood, that just that chance that you know is going to happen is here.
Right. It comes. Right. Buying a lottery ticket.
Yeah.
You know, every once in a while you get, you know, you win a $5 prize or you win an $8, right. you know, every once in a while. So you keep going back because this is now I'm going to get it. And so it's based on that idea of reinforcing. The brain is chasing things and these systems are set up to make the brain continue chasing things. You know, you and I have talked about that center at Stanford University. Mm-hmm. It's an entire building filled with psychologists who work on these things to make them as compelling as possible, as alluring as possible. Some people say as addictive as possible. We see it with video games. We see it with, you know, all types of social media. They're built to be compulsive, to be used compulsively.
Absolutely. And the problem really is that because so much of this is tailored
right.
for young people, especially
right.
adolescents, they are especially susceptible to this because, you know, their brain, we all know that their brain is continuing to develop it
right.
up into their mid-20s. Their frontal mm-hmm. lobes are still, you know, right. sort of finishing up their development. And so, because of the way that their frontal lobes are not quite fully mature, the way that their limbic system, as a result, still sort of dominates the brain system, they aren't quite capable of being able to put the phone to the side to That's say, right. you know what, I can wait until later, or I can you know, inhibit this or have some delayed gratification, and I can put this aside until later. The adolescent brain has a really difficult time with that. And so when you combine the adolescent brain with this allure of social media, it's a really toxic combination.
That's right. And teenagers, young people are especially vulnerable to this allure. And it's a biological, you know, you have several brains. And as it turns out, the reward system of the brain develops before the control system of the brain. And so during the youngsters have this, they're going to get the reward and then they'll, and then they think about it later. With adults, it's sort of, they're evenly matched. You know, we get the opportunity for a reward, but our control system is developed and we say, well, do I really want to do that? Right. That doesn't work in teenagers. Teenagers go for the reward and then the thinking. The other thing about teenagers, as every parent knows, what's the most important thing that teenagers are after? Connection with other teenagers.
Right.
It's the time in your life when you're separating from your parents. And what are you seeking? You're seeking relationships with people your own age. Right. So teenagers, I mean, we all want to be social. Teenagers are especially vulnerable because that's what they're obsessed by at that age, is social connections. So they are particularly
vulnerable,
thank you, particularly vulnerable to these things that right. keep you connected with other people.
Absolutely. And I'm glad that you used the word obsessed, because, you know, and we've used the word compulsive, because we so many articles, so many authors refer to this as an addiction. And right. People who like to have their house neat and things put away where they go, you know, they self-diagnose as OCD. You know,
yeah, I have OCD.
They're not really OCD, but they say they're OCD. And we use the word addiction in much the same way. It gets the point across, but it's not really an addiction. You know, it's we like to think of it as just problematic use.
That's right. That's a much better term. Problematic right. use is a much more accurate term to use when you're talking about this compulsive use of these devices and applications.
Right. Because we're not talking about somebody who's going, you know, yes, teenagers get very upset if you take their phones away and if you limit access to some of those things. Yes, they may go behind your back and try to get to it anyways. But teenagers have done that for years. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, back before cell phones, if you restricted a teenager and you didn't let them hang out with their friends, they would sneak out at the house in the middle of the night to go hang out with their friends. It's really the same thing. Mm-hmm. It's just a different form of it. So it's problematic use. And as we've talked about before, I think it's part of the danger of thinking about it as an addiction is, so then what do you do about it? You know, treatment right. for addiction is abstinence. You know, I mean, there's some addiction models that talk about, you know, safe use, appropriate use, especially with things like alcohol and things like that. But the vast majority of treatment programs are all about abstinence. Right. You're not going to stop using technology. Your teenager is not going to stop using technology. Mm-hmm. And so referring to it and thinking about it as an addiction really isn't going to get us very far, because you can't do the typical treatment for it if you're thinking about it that way.
That's right. Think about heroin. You know, heroin, there's no amount of heroin that's beneficial.
It's right.
Just, you just never use it. Well, the internet is not like that. Social media is not like that, because there are some benefits to social media. So we need to be careful about this term addiction, okay? Because you're right, the treatment will be complete abstinence. Well, you're not going to get complete abstinence. Okay. So that's why the term problematic use is really a much better way to talk about this and to think about it, because that will lead you to the kind of interventions that we're going to be recommending in just a couple of minutes.
Yeah. And speaking of what will we do about it? You know, we strongly encourage parents to recognize that, you know, and we've used this phrase on podcasts in the past, the genie is out of the bottle.
Absolutely.
You know, you're not going to be able to pull that back. You're not going to be able to unplug your adolescent, despite, you know, some wonderful researchers and wonderful authors who have proposed, you know, significant limitations or even removal of some of these things from adolescents. It's very unlikely to happen, at least to happen on a way that you're going to be able to maintain full control. So instead of thinking about you know, well, we just have to remove it all. Let's think about how to use it in a reasonable and appropriate manner.
That's right.
So we're minimizing it as a as problematic use and using it in a functional, appropriate way.
Right. Yeah. Now, today, this happens every day, and I'm sure it happens to you too. Parents say, well, I can take it away, but the school gives them an iPad. I can take it away, but the school, you know, we have a law in Florida that you're, is it a law now that you're not allowed to have your cell phone in class?
I don't think it's a law. No. The things that have been restricted is that if you're using the school Wi-Fi or the school internet, you have significant limitations of things that you have access to.
Well, I had a student the other day, and she said, I can't connect my phone to the school's Wi-Fi.
Right.
You know, I can't. So I have to go somewhere else to get connection. And we're not allowed to have it out. We can have it in a backpack. We can put it in, but you're not allowed to display the phone. So schools are trying to limit the use, you know, because you can't just have free reign. You have to limit the use. So schools are trying to control the use of these devices. And that's what we mean by problematic use. Problematic use is when the use of these devices interferes with other activities or takes over other activities. We've talked about this many, many times. The problem with devices, social media, it doesn't matter, whatever we're talking about, is that you displace other activities in favor of social media.
Right.
It's not that social media in and of itself is bad. It's when it displaces other activities. And what does it displace? Homework, right. Sleep, chores, family time. It absorbs all those hours so that you're compulsively doing one thing at the expense of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's what we mean by problematic use, is that it's overuse, it's over-reliance.
Right. Absolutely. So let's look at some of the suggestions by, you know, we've had some recent suggestions by the Surgeon General, as well as right. from the American Psychological Association. You know, the Surgeon General, you know, it's pretty consistent, again, that for those children and teenagers under the age of 13 and under or so, mm-hmm. You know, they recommend very close monitoring. I really appreciated the words of, and now I can't remember who it was that said it, but they talked about, we do all of this work to protect mm-hmm. our 15 and 16 year olds. We make sure that they learn how to drive a car. We make sure that they learn how to, you know, navigate their surroundings and control this vehicle, this dangerous vehicle, you know, before we just give them the keys and they go off on their own. But how many times do we just give, you know, a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, a cell phone and just assume that they're going to make good decisions? Yeah. Now, certainly a cell phone isn't the same thing as driving a 2,000 pound vehicle.
Right.
But it can lead to just as many problems.
Right.
It can lead to significant, you know, social issues, emotional issues, mm-hmm. behavioral issues. And so those under the age of 13, we need to have a very close, you know, close monitoring, close control over what they have access to. You know, that may mean not allowing them to have their devices in their bedrooms without right. supervision. It may mean that, you know, they get turned off, you know, at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening, you know, so that it doesn't affect their sleep, or that it doesn't, right. they don't sit in their rooms on it all night, but it requires close monitoring.
That's right. And, you know, when the Surgeon General, this was in May of this year, 2023, when he issued this first advisory about social media mm-hmm. And the risks to young people. And then the American Psychological Association very quickly developed these 10 recommendations
right.
for how parents should handle this. And one of the first things they said was that if you hand a device over to a child, and they said between the ages of 10 and 14, you have to have very close control of the device. You, as a parent, you have to keep this thing under very tight restrictions. This is sort of their learner's permit period, okay, from 10 to 14. And you have to keep accounts private so that they don't start getting this personalized information, the algorithm, okay? And so the other thing they recommend and is that you keep all devices out of bedrooms and no screens at night. And the first recommendation they make is you have to protect sleep.
Right.
Okay, this is the first thing they talk about. And that children in this age group from ages 6 to 12 should get about 8 or 9 hours of sleep a night. And if they don't, there are going to be very significant and serious physical and cognitive consequences of lack of sleep. Mm-hmm. And I did not know about this study, but it's called the ABCD study, Adolescent Brain and Cognitive Development. They've enrolled, the researchers at the University of Maryland, it's an NIH grant, have enrolled 12,000 youngsters, 12,000 volunteers in this large longitudinal study that they're doing year after year after year. And one of the early studies that they did is they compared two groups of kids, one who got about 9 hours of sleep and one who got fewer than 9 hours of sleep. And what they discovered was that the children with insufficient sleep, and insufficient sleep is about 6 hours or 7 hours.
Right.
Well, there are many kids who are getting 4 and 5 hours.
Well, in this study, they differentiated those who got nine or more hours versus those who got less than 9 hours.
So it's not a huge, they're not talking about 4 hours versus 8 hours.
Right.
They're talking about just an hour or two difference.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And this led to significant differences. Those kids who got less than 9 hours of sleep demonstrated things like impaired cognitive functions, like decision making, conflict resolution, working memory, learning. And this difference persisted. And I think that's really the important thing, is we think, oh, well, you know, maybe if we start to change things, it'll be better. But the differences persisted for up to the 2 year follow up.
You know, Bernie, you and I know enough about tests. If you can measure a difference, it's a pretty good, if you can give a test,
yeah,
that says there's a difference between, a significant difference between the performance between this, and that's a pretty impressive difference. We're not talking about a subtle change. We're talking about a measurable difference in cognition and problem solving and memory.
Okay? Especially when you're talking about a sample size of 12,000.
That's right. I mean, you can't underplay that. The other more alarming part of this for me was that they've also done neuroimaging studies on these kids. And this absolutely floored me.
Mm-hmm.
The kids who get less sleep had less gray matter and smaller brain volumes.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know why that's happening.
Right.
But when I talk about significant consequences, we're talking about major disruptions in the anatomy of the brain, not just cognitive functions.
I was just going to say, we're talking about structural differences. We're talking about the structure of the brain itself.
Right.
Different in those who got, again, less than 9 hours of sleep. And we're talking about that same, you know, age range. That's huge, you know. We're talking about a major problem,
right? Because we talk about there's diminished memory, problem solving, cognitive functions, and then you look at the brain structures responsible for them, and you say, "Oh my gosh, they're actually smaller."
Yeah,
those brain regions that control these functions are actually changed by a lack of sleep.
Right.
So. We're taking just the first of these 10 recommendations, which is sleep, and saying parents have got to protect sleep. They have to protect their children so that they get an adequate amount of sleep. Because if you don't, there are going to be serious psychological and biological consequences to diminished sleep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So. Again, you know, we're tying this together, is that one of the main reasons that kids are losing sleep is because they have their devices and they're scrolling through social media into the night. And, you know, we have patients that we talk to all the time where, you know, they're up until 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning and have to get up and be at school and ready at 7 o'clock.
I have kids who are getting up at 4:30 and 5 o'clock in the morning. That means they should be going to sleep at 9 o'clock.
Right.
And they're not. They're not going to sleep at 9 o'clock.
Absolutely. So we will certainly be talking more about this, because there are lots of other recommendations. It's just too much to put into one podcast, but we'll talk more about this because it is important. And in this ABCD study, we will post a link to information about that in the show notes so that you can check that out, because some really interesting stuff with that. But we'll be back to talk more about this over the course of the weeks.
Yeah, we'll follow the lawsuit. We'll try to keep tabs on the lawsuit and see how they deal with these terms like addiction. But we'll also, I also have to start following this study, the ABCD study, because those are absolutely astonishing results from their work. So
absolutely,
we'll keep you apprised.
Absolutely. So, all right, that's it for today. Until next time, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.